Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f-. So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hello, hello. Hope you liked this week's episode. It was a lot of fun to record. We got to check out a pretty solid James Bond movie with our guest Reese this week. And yeah, had a lot of fun recording this one. Quick thing up top though, it did decide to rain so heavily here in Melbourne as soon as we pressed the record button. And for the first, I think it's 25 to half an hour, the rain is present in the audio mix, unfortunately. I've done my best to edit it out. I've done my best to noise remove it, but it is still present in particular moments throughout the episode, but mainly just in that first 25-minute long period. Hopefully, it doesn't take away from your listening experience too much. I wish we had time to re-record the intro, but we unfortunately did not. But I hope you liked the episode. It was a lot of fun, and we've got some pretty fun ones coming up a little later on this month as well. So thank you so much for listening, as always, and here's the episode.
Darling, darling, are you there?
Oh, yes, darling, I am here.
Are you enjoying our lovely pleasure cruise out on the river this evening?
I am indeed. Oh, the water do be sounding quite rapid, though. It's almost sounds like it's rain, but it's just the water.
Yeah, no, that couldn't be audio trouble we're having because of my tin roof. No. That's actually the sounds of the river.
Yeah.
As we're going down on our fancy yacht, yes. I sure hope there's no, you know, rain or anything. Something crashing down on my boat. I can't have it. I hate that.
Do you know what? I wish I had a real man right now.
What? What do you mean by that?
just a real
what?
Bloke.
Rough landing.
Oh.
Who are you?
Me. I'm Bond. James Bond.
Oh my.
What have you done to the roof of my yacht?
Nothing. I just came in for a rough landing after barely surviving a crash, that's all.
Oh, everything you say sounds like it's leading to a joke.
I don't know what you mean. It's not like I'm a collection of cliches at all. Darling, it sounds like you need a drink. Maybe a martini. Go prepare one. Shaken, not stirred.
Okay. I don't know.
Welcome to Oldie But a Goodie. We've got a real James Bond dropping in tonight.
What?
On this episode, I'm of course joined by my lovely wife, Sandra.
Hello!
And it is me, the about-to-be-cuckled husband, question mark.
Yep.
And joining us as our resident James Bond is Reese Pump.
Yes, hello, that's right. I'm replacing Daniel Craig in his retirement.
Yes, of course.
Wowee, you're back on the show.
I am, finally. It's actually been a long time since you and me have podcast in general, let alone on this show.
Yeah, it's been about 3 months, something like that.
Yeah, that's what happens when lockdowns end.
Yeah.
And then when we go back into them, we're recording.
We're recording again. I mean, we had you penciled in for this for, since last week when we chose the movie.
Yeah.
You literally swooped in.
I did.
While we were recording and you were like, Bond, I'm in.
Where's that drink, by the way?
We are talking about The Living Daylights. It's the 15th Bond film, not counting that weird Woody Allen one.
Oh, God.
Because technically then it would be the 16th? Or was Sean Connery's final one that's not technically a Bond film after this? I don't even know. Anyway, it's the 15th one, according to Wikipedia.
And that's got to be right.
And we're talking about it. We watch movies from 1987 in the order they came out in. And the first impressions of this film is like, what did you bloody think, mate?
I'm a fan of the Bonds. I'm a fan of the man. I'm a fan of the action. I'm a fan of the movie being watchable, which is definitely like a low bar, a very low bar I have. But so far this year, there's a lot more movies that haven't jumped that bar than this film. But I think this film managed to jump that bar. And I quite enjoyed it. I like a good action film. I like a good spy film. And I think this did it for
nice.
Me. So I'm a fan.
Nice.
I got positive views.
Do those positive reviews continue when we ask Reese's first impressions? Find out now!
Well, the suspense is killing you. Yes, they do. There are a few issues I've got, and we'll get into that. But overall, very fun to watch. I love Timothy Dalton in almost anything, and James Bond is no exception. He's brilliant.
Yeah, he only did two films, but he's my favourite Bond, probably.
I think so, me too.
Mainly because he didn't get a bad one to ruin it.
It's crazy, because I looked at a lot of the reviews, and people are torn between loving him and hating him.
Yeah. Mm.
There's two ways you look at him. And I quite liked him. I thought he was a great Bond.
Yeah.
I'm not a huge Bond nerd, though. I haven't watched all the films.
Me either.
So I don't know which is the best, which is the worst, which is mediocre, you know.
This is a good one. There's a lot of plot in this movie, so we're not going to go too in-depth with the plot, I think, because there's a lot of it.
The ending took like half an hour.
Yeah.
I thought it was done a half an hour ago by the end of it. I was like, what?
Yeah.
How is this movie still going? I said that like five times.
That's one thing about James Bond movies that I don't love is that they've all got to be over 2 hours long. I'm like, come on, can't we just have one that's like in and out?
Yeah.
It's like all the Craig ones are like 160 minutes and it's like, come on.
And then they put Quantum of Solace in slow motion and it feels like a 4-hour movie.
That's true. Actually, yeah, that one is only 90 minutes, but it feels like it's 4 hours. So. Great stuff. We'll jump into Living Daylights in a second though. But first, Zach... We do Patreon episodes, and oh boy, is our Space Jam 2 review up now.
It absolutely is, and you should check it out by checking out our Patreon at patreon.com/something all but a goodie.
Yeah.
I don't know how Patreon's things work, but yes.
I can't remember the URL. It might be slash...
There's a linky in the description below.
Exactly, it's there.
Surely everyone knows you just search the name of the show, you find the logo, you click it, you buy it for $1, and then you're good.
Yeah, or buy it for $5 and get some bonus episodes. Boom, boom.
That was a reference to your RoboCop episode,
our RoboCop episode.
Which feels like a current reference for me, but of course, it isn't.
Oh, yeah, these are timeless episodes, Reese. No references to current day.
No, of course.
I'd buy that for $1.
Is Rick and Morty in Space Jam 2? That's the real question. You find out in the review. I don't know why that's my...
that's your little hint, your drop.
I mean, you can literally watch the trailer and see that they're in it. So, you know.
Wah, wah.
But Zach, you chose the Bond movie.
I did. I chose this Bond movie from, I believe there was a congested vote as another movie was highly recommended by the guest last week. So,
well, was it recommended or did he just threaten to dropkick you if you didn't choose it?
Yeah, my life is in danger. I'm going to need Reese Bond to save my life.
Of course.
It's called The Lost Boys, about a family... who moved to a small town. They're pulled into a world of bikers, vampires, and romance. It looks really good. But it is directed by Joel Schumacher. So I don't think I'll ever forgive him for Batman and Robin.
No. That's the reason I watch
it. That's a cold response, Sandra.
It's because of Batman and Robin.
Anyway, let's get back to Bond. James Bond.
Let's talk about James Bond. It was released July 31st in 1987. That's the US release date. We usually go by the US release date. Mm. It was released earlier in the UK, but, you know, America.
Yeah. It's not like Bond has anything to do with the UK anyway. So.
No, not at all.
It's just an excuse to watch a James Bond movie.
Yeah.
Let's be honest.
This is based off a short story of the same name that you can find in Octopussy in the Living Daylights, which is Ian Fleming's final Bond novel. This is the last Bond film to adapt one of his stories until Casino Royale.
Wow.
All the others were original stories. And you can tell the script is adapted by... Actually, I don't even think Ian Fleming's that good of a writer anyway, so I don't know why I said that.
Whoa.
Well, like with George R. R. Martin, I keep saying this about George R. R. Martin, he comes up with great characters, great concepts, but putting a story together, maybe not his strong suit.
No. And also Ian Fleming, awful dude, by all accounts.
Oh yeah, I was going to say... I also don't like Ian Fleming very much.
No. The script was adapted by Richard Maybaum, who has done every single Bond film up until Dalton's second one. He left before Brosnan came in. And you can tell. Nah, I like GoldenEye. It's good. It's directed by John Glenn, who was working as an editor and second unit director since on Her Majesty's Secret Service. He started then, was editor all the way up until 1981, when he started directing the films themselves, and then he did every one from then until I think he did License to Kill. I'm not sure. He also was second unit director on Superman, so that's pretty cool.
Oh, nice.
Ah, linking it back to that other episode.
Yeah.
May or may not exist.
Do I want to link the first Superman and the fourth Superman film together, or are they very different things?
Nope.
I don't know.
Nope.
I don't think I want to link them.
No, you don't. The answer is no, you don't. Check out our episode on it to find out why.
Playing James Bond, or the agent known as James Bond in this movie, is Timothy Dalton. Before then,
yes.
He did a lot of small films, small British and American films. The biggest film he was probably a part of was Flash Gordon from the 80s, from 1980. He did that, he did this, and he did License to Kill in 89, which didn't perform too well, so he was kind of pushed out of the role. I can't remember if it was his choice to leave or not. I think it wasn't his choice to leave. I don't know, which is a shame because he's quite good.
Oh, he's very good.
Yeah, I quite liked him. I thought he played the line of serious and charming quite well. You know?
Yeah, and he looks very good when he puts his collar up in the scene where he's got the sniper rifle, so you can't see the white of his shirt. He just looked really classy,
yeah.
Which is what you want Bond to look like.
Yeah.
There was that. He was very professional Bond, like he was a secret agent.
Yeah,
which some of the Bond movies I've watched, it doesn't feel like they're a secret agent.
Yeah, because it's like Sean Connery is more of a killer.
Yeah.
Roger Moore's just a sex fiend. Timothy Dalton feels like a spy. Pierce Brosnan is just a one-lining joke machine. Again, I love GoldenEye, but all his other films are not very good. And then Craig is, what, an action hero?
Hulk. he's the Hulk.
Yeah, he's the Hulk.
Of the James Bond, he's just the Hulk. He runs through walls and
me smash bad guy
and some ladies.
Like, oh. Me smash you.
It's a bit more nuanced than that, but I did see this comparison where, you know, in the beginning of Casino Royale, the guy's doing all the parkour and he jumps through the ventilation shaft, or where the ventilation shaft is going to be.
Yeah.
And then Bond just goes through Bond smash and runs through the wall as it's being built.
So since being Bond, Dalton is also in Hot Fuzz, great film. He's in The End of Time, the Doctor Who story.
Yes, Doctor Who, and he gave everyone a shower.
He's in Penny Dreadful as well, which I haven't seen but have heard good things about. And most recently, he is, of course, in DC's Doom Patrol.
Oh, yes.
Some other names, though, that were floating around to take over Bond after Roger Moore included Sam Neill.
Wow. I didn't know that.
From Jurassic World, which had been interesting. Also, Mel Gibson, which makes complete sense. You know, he was very much in that sphere at the moment, but he's not British, so...
No.
That would have been a bit weird.
And he's a Holocaust denier.
Well, yeah, and he's also... And then also, Pierce Brosnan was in talks to take over the role before he took over the role.
Yeah, a bit like Capaldi with Doctor Who.
Yeah, exactly. Playing the Bond girl of this film, the singular Bond girl. There's not multiple
Thank
of
God.
This film.
I mean, there is a wife on a boat.
Ah, the cold opening doesn't count.
It counted for the podcast.
Yeah, true. It is Mariam Diabo playing Kara. She hasn't really done anything else. A lot of TV movies, but that's about it.
Mm.
Which is a shame, because I think she's quite good.
I do too.
There's also John Rhys-Davies playing General Pushkin of the KGB. He is Gimli and also Treebeard in Lord of the Rings.
I love him. He's great.
Yeah. And he's Sala in the Indiana Jones films. Yeah, he's so good.
He's one of my favourite actors. Not because he's Gimli, but because he's Gimli. but also, I like him as the Russian KGB guy.
Yeah.
Sort of bad guy. He is bad guy, but not bad guy.
John Doe Baker is the American arms dealer Whitaker.
Yes.
Who was in a lot of westerns during the 60s and 70s, which makes complete sense.
He was so stupid. I loved his character. Just like, yeehaw, America! I love war and guns!
War.
Pew, pew, pew!
Exactly. Oh, he's in GoldenEye too.
Oh, is he?
Yeah, he plays Jack Wade.
Oh,
hang on a sec.
Jack Quaid from The Boys.
No, Wade. I thought that for a second too.
Dutch actor and director Euron Krab plays the Russian defector Koskov.
Mm.
And then there's also all the classics. Desmond Llewelyn, I don't know how to say his last name, and that's on me. But he plays Q, and he's good and old and very good.
I love him. I love the Q segments where it's a little bit goofy, but also, holy shit, they just blew something up.
They blew something up with the Ghetto Destroyer or whatever it's called.
Oh, yeah,
Ghetto Blaster. Ghetto Blaster.
I cringed at that.
I love... The old man's like, I'm hip with the kids. We got the ghetto blaster. I was like, ooh. Q, you're getting on in age.
Oh, Q. He's still in like six films after this one.
Yeah, I love him.
Sticks around.
Yeah, I thought I'd seen him in other Q. Like, he's been Q a few other times, right?
Yeah, he's Q in like all of them, right? He's in all of them until the actor died.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And then they brought in the Monty Python guy.
Yeah, yeah, no, he's definitely great. I love him as Q.
This is Robert Brown's second last role as M. He's barely in it, but he's good. He's good. And then Caroline Bliss is the new Moneypenny. And just like the actress that plays Kara, none of the female performers did anything else.
Yep.
So it's got 74% on Rotten Tomatoes, 66% audience score. Critics at the time were pretty split. Most of them loved it. And said that it was a return to form after the garbage Roger Moore movies. Look, I've got a thing against Roger Moore.
More like Roger Less.
Some said that it took itself too seriously, which I can see. It's not the most serious James Bond film. That's the one after this, License to Kill, but it's definitely...
Yet they salivate over Craig, which is the most serious.
Yeah, yeah. No. I quite liked the balance between serious and silly. I thought that was done quite well.
Yeah.
Except in the case of, obviously, the last bit of the movie, which stretched on for an extra half an hour. But
I didn't notice it. Actually, I was telling Sandro before we recorded, I saw this the day after you told me last week to watch this film. And I rewatched it again last night with the intention of taking notes. And I've taken some notes, but at about halfway through, I couldn't be bothered taking the notes. I was just watching it, so it drew me in.
Yeah, yeah. Like, it's a good film, and it's a good ending. I just thought it lasted a bit long, you know?
Yeah, I agree.
That's kind of the thing with, like, Inner Space as well. It's like, I like what's happening, but, oh boy, is this film still going? I do get that.
Yeah.
I do get that feeling.
Now, I keep forgetting all the Bond film names, but what's the one with the submarine, the ship that eats the submarine, so to speak?
Oh, you know?
Spy Who Loved Me? Is that one?
That's Brosnan's second one. It's like Tomorrow something.
Tomorrow Never Dies?
Yeah, that's it. Tomorrow Never Dies.
That one goes on forever as well, but I still really like it. It's just the thing with Bond. They like their action and they draw it out.
It's interesting though, because the action is impressive for the time, because there's a lot of like Mission Impossible style stunts in there that are really cool, but then also compared to like modern day films, the action's like, oh, that's quaint, isn't it? They're hanging out the back of a plane, that's real quaint.
Well, yeah, but I prefer that, you know, it's pretty much all practical. I do have to say, speaking of action, I really cringed when the synth drums came in with the... with the James Bond theme when he's chasing the van at the beginning of it.
Yeah, I've got a lot to say about the soundtrack.
I think it's terrible in the first half, gets better later on, but let's finish what you're saying.
So it cost $40 million all up. Pretty expensive for a Bond film as well at the time. Yeah. They were all about 35, I think, so this one pushed it a little bit further. What do you think it made? I've got the worldwide numbers here as well.
Oh, wow.
Because it is, of course, a Bond film, and it's probably the biggest release we've done this year so far. All the other great films we've done are like R-rated sci-fi actions.
So really limited audience.
Yeah, yeah. And the other two would be RoboCop and Predator, which would both... R-rated, so not as widely dispersed.
Exactly.
What do you think it made worldwide based off a $40 million budget? We'll start with Zach. What do you think?
So $40 million budget. It is a Bond film.
Mm.
Yeah.
It's got that big, big name, and it's not like Jaws, where no one gives a shit about the sequels. I'm gonna guess $220 million.
$220 million. All right.
I'm guessing big numbers. I'm looking big money.
I might even go bigger and just do around $300 million.
Ooh.
Yeah, okay.
Well, Zach is the closest. It was $190 million.
Ah, okay. Yeah, okay.
Part of me thinks Beverly Hills Cop 2 might have actually made more.
That's a crime against cinema.
Well, I mean...
that's a good film. The first one's
Beverly Hills Cop 2 made $275 million. So, yeah, actually, that's the biggest film that we've done this year so far. And this is coming in at number two. That's still an impressive number, though.
Oh, yeah.
That's good. Yeah.
There's heaps of taglines. Let's quickly go through them. You've got to give them thumbs up or thumbs down.
James Bond, 007, at his most dangerous in the living daylights.
That what?
Thumbs down.
That's a tagline?
That's so boring.
That sounds like they're putting keywords in.
Yeah.
For, like, in their description or something.
Yeah, it's pretty terrible.
That's a big oldie thumbs down from me.
But that's literally what you would say about any film, because they try to up the stakes every time. So, yeah, that's a thumbs down from me. Yeah.
This Bond is dangerous.
Down.
What, the other ones weren't?
Yeah.
What?
Pretty sure they've all got a license to kill, and they do it regularly.
Yep.
Yes. Quite liberal with that. Yeah. Thumbs down.
That's a thumbs down. Yeah,
these are quite bad.
Boy.
Timothy Dalton is the new James Bond 007.
That's just a news piece. That isn't even a tagline.
It's better, but it's still not great.
It's factual, so potentially a thumbs up for that.
Yeah, I'm gonna give it a shaky thumbs down.
All right,
yeah.
All right.
Okay.
Enigmatic, okay. Dangerous, always living on the edge.
Yeah, it's all right.
I like that one a bit more. That one entices me. It's like, ah, this must be a Bondy boy.
But surely that's literally just describing the character.
Yeah, again, it's just a shaky thumbs down. Please tell me there's more.
There's two more.
Yeah.
Okay.
007 for thrills, 007 for romance.
Ah, I thought it was going to say for kills.
Yeah.
Thrills and kills.
There's no romance in this movie.
Yeah, there is. He takes 2 hours because he's got to sleep with the woman on the boat.
Oh, yeah.
There's multiple romances.
And then the final one is License to Thrill.
Isn't that what they use for all of them? Seriously, I've seen that all the time.
And I love it.
And also his second one is called License to Kill, which is just like makes it even more awkward.
Yeah. But they literally reference that he's got the license to kill all the time, so yeah, I'll go with that just because it's applicable to all of them.
Yeah, I'll give that a shaky thumbs up.
Yeah.
That's the best one that I like, because it's License to Thrill.
Yeah. That's as bad as the music at the beginning of the film. Anyway.
Let's jump into the synopsis. Do we have to talk about the beginning?
Yes, absolutely.
I quite liked the beginning.
I liked the very start, yeah.
Yeah, it's got next to nothing to do with the plot. It's just a good introduction.
So what happens is you have a group of individuals in a plane.
Who could they be?
We see some commanding officer who's like, all right, this is just a drill, but I'm proud that we were selected, blah, blah, blah. To jump out of the plane. You're like, oh shit, we're just jumping into the action. They all swoop down in their parachutes, landing at this sort of military base sort of thing. But uh-oh, one guy gets spotted by a bad guy. Oh no, he gets shot, and it's pink paint.
Ha-ha.
He has pink paint. Ha-ha, and he says, ah, you're dead.
You're dead, isn't it? You're dead, isn't it?
Very poorly delivered. Oh, you're out of it. You're dead.
Oh, yeah, you done being killed, eh?
Better go get the drinks then, brother.
Oh, no, there's going to be a lot of British accents in the synopsis, isn't there?
Yeah.
And Russian.
Ah, yes.
Oh, yes. You've done been shot in where the paint painters. You're dead now.
Oi.
Alrighty, Heidi.
Oi.
Obviously, this is a training exercise where they're trying to get into this base without being killed by these guys.
And the one forgot to put the paint in the gun and actually shoots a guard.
Oh, my God.
Oh, no.
Oh, wait. He's actually evil as he chops the rope of one guy's grappling hook and he falls to his death.
But James Bond is like, I thought I seen something in it.
Yeah. Oh, I saw a guy do a little backflip off a cliff. Oh, that ain't right.
You would have thought that James Bond being a Cockney this time would have made the news.
Here's my question, though. Is he James Bond at this point, or are all these people in contention to be the next James Bond?
You see, I thought that for a second the first time I saw it. It would have been a nice idea to set that up. But no, he was Bond straight away.
I guess.
I did quite like the establishing shot of him. He hears the guy yelling as he falls down. He turns around. It's very dramatic. And I just thought, yeah, this is a Bond film.
Oh, yeah.
So our resident James Bond runs after this evil doer.
And then this drum beat starts playing.
Yeah.
It's very epic.
Oh, it's very 80s.
It's not epic. Look,
the orchestral part of it is epic because it's the James Bond theme. It's so good.
Well, the James Bond thing, like, the theme's great. It really hit me in the final action scene where they use this same piece of music. And I'm just like, this doesn't feel epic because it's like, no. I don't know, there's something about it. It doesn't feel.
It's the drum beat. Good. It slows it down too much, I reckon. It's just.
He runs after this car, and then one of the guards spots him.
Shoots him.
And he shoots him. And he's like, hey,
You're dead.
Yeah, that was good. Yeah.
We're meant to stop the exercise now, bruh.
Is that a Kiwi accent?
I don't know anymore.
Oh, hoity-toity. So he hops onto the car, he does.
Oh, my God.
And it takes out that scallywag in the driver's seat. Oh, blimey, it was a fine action scene.
Oh, he doesn't just take him out, though. He drives the car off a cliff.
Yes. Yeah. While there's explosives in the back on fire.
And they narrowly miss hitting monkeys.
Yep.
Which I wrote, just, monkeys! Exclamation mark.
Yeah, we get a lot of monkeys throughout this film, I think. It's good.
So he flies out of the car with a parachute, and then the car explodes, and he's like, ha-ha. And where does he land? Oh, only on a lonely woman's yacht.
I know. And she says she's so bored. There are only men and drinks around here. If only there was a real man. And then right on cue, he lands, does a somersault type thing, and then grabs her phone and says, she'll call you back.
That's great. Mm. She's like, random stranger parachuting onto my yacht. Mm.
Then he calls saying, I'll be there in an hour. And she goes, won't you stay for a drink? Better make that two.
Ha ha ha. Then the theme song starts playing. It's by the band Aha. It's fine. It's not very good.
Yeah.
It's not like catchy, but it's like, it's listenable.
It does the job. Yeah. It's James Bond by numbers. It's got a song by a pretty well-known band. It has women scantily clad and it has guns in it. That's all you want. That's what you need.
Then you're like, oh, you could show this to someone and it's like, oh, this is a Bond opening.
Exactly. Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
If you're surfing the channel, oh, they're showing a James Bond movie. Let's watch it. And then you realize it goes to 1 o'clock in the morning when you ad breaks. I'm going to fall asleep before that.
The amount of times I was like a young 11-year-old watching Bond films on TV and they lasted until 1 in the morning. Ridiculous.
Yeah.
Come on, Channel 7. I think it was Channel 7. I can't remember.
It is nowadays. So it probably was.
Just watch him on Stan, 11-year-old me.
Yeah. Hang on. Did Stan not exist at some point in our lives?
What? So James Bond's late to a symphony.
Yeah.
He's like, oh boy, I'm late, innit? I've got to go to a symphony. I got to help out with my friends.
And then the guy he meets confirms that. He says, you're bloody late.
It's like, Bond's like, oh, we got time. Chill out, man. Come on.
Yeah.
Just cool your lid, bruh.
And Bond looks on stage and he sees a cello player. And it's like, oh, maybe I should have gotten here on time. Not for the mission. No, who cares about the mission?
Exactly.
But for this random one cello player, I'm sure they won't be important to the film.
Yeah, well, am I right in saying she's the only blonde person in the symphony orchestra?
Yeah, probably.
Yeah. Well, they have to make her, you know, stand out so the audience can see that there's something different about her. So that we can keep an eye on her later on in the film.
She's not like the other cello players.
And so then they're meeting up on a mission and they go across the road to another building. And as it turns out, this guy's put a sniper rifle in a bed. And what they're trying to do is protect this defecting Russian general or commander. Either way, pretty high profile individual. And so he's at the show, the performance, and he's going to leave soon. And it's their job to protect him.
Mm.
And he makes a very clever escape after the show. He goes to the toilet, flushes the toilet, opens the bathroom window and climbs out.
Using the sound of the toilet to mask the sound of the window opening.
Which is quite good. But Bond knows that there's probably going to be some Russian snipers.
Yes, so he becomes an English sniper.
I think we talked about this before. I really like the scene where he goes super, like, professional.
Yeah.
And he's actually professional, where, like, guy says, oh, you'll probably need these bullets, and he's like, nope.
They wear armour, yeah.
Yeah.
KGB.
Snipers wear heavy Kevlar, so I'll need the penetrating ones.
Oh, and the other guy was struggling with his night vision goggles. He just reaches over and flicks the switch for him.
that was funny.
Yeah.
See, that's that little bit of humour, you know? It's not too much. It's just that little bits that make me giggle. That's what I liked about this film.
As he's looking across the street to where the guy's making his escape, he sees the cellist holding a sniper rifle.
My God. That's not a musical instrument. Unless you're in America.
Exactly. And then he double checks if she's blonde, so he decides not to kill her.
Yep.
And shoots the sniper instead of her.
Yes. Shoots the sniper so that it makes kind of like a bruise on her arm. It's not really important, but I guess it is for later. Ah, who cares?
It's Chekhov's bruise.
It's Chekhov's bruise.
And so the general runs over to the other side of the street. after the other British agent accuses Bond of missing deliberately.
How does he know that? I mean, obviously, I guess everyone knows he's an excellent shot.
And they also know he's a womanizer, which is odd because...
Yes.
This is, like Sandra said, a new Bond. So I guess maybe they... Maybe in the job criteria they say you have to have slept with multiple women.
Yeah, yeah. I'm sure it's part of it, honestly.
I mean, that would make sense because you've got to get, like, information sometimes out of people.
Exactly,
so
and sometimes sleeping with people helps.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
To get that information.
So, you're looking for the position of Bond. How many women have you slept with recently? It's like, I don't know, lady. Maybe you should find out.
Oh, no, no.
And that's how he got the job. No. It makes sense.
Yeah. I hate that.
That's what they would look for in a candidate if they try and bang the instructor, you know? It's like, that's the Bond we're after.
There's this one comic. I think Matt Myra wrote it from what used to be the Nerdist podcast. I think he wrote it. I forget what it's called. It might be called The Illegitimates or something, and it's all of Bond's illegitimate children teaming up to take down crime.
That's brilliant.
That's incredible.
It has to happen. I've got mixed feelings about Bond. I used to absolutely love it, but the older I get, the more... I don't know, respectful I get, the less comfortable I am with Bond as a character.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. As you mature in age, you realise just what a hound dog is.
Exactly.
Yeah. Yeah. It's annoying because it's a staple of the franchise. I get that. So I get people who would defend it. Like, you know, it's just a movie. It's a part of it and all that. But also, I don't know, parts of it are harmful. I think you can... have that as a part of his character, but do it well, like the most recent Craig.
Oh, right. Yeah, yeah, yeah. No, I don't think it's a bad feature that that's one of his weaknesses is women. That makes sense. But, like, the problem is that they just use women as, hey, here's the token female this
week. Oh, my God. And in the next scene coming up, when they're making their escape with the Russian general, the woman there goes into the control room, unbuttons her top and pulls the other guy into a very buxom chest. And then there are these euphemisms of, you know, the pressure gauge going up and things like that. It's so cringe.
That was almost a moment of self-parody. I was almost like, is this on purpose?
I hope they're self-aware.
Luckily, that never comes back in any other Bond film, the objectification of women.
No, not at all. Never.
So, the way that they escape is they put Kozkov, which is the name of the Russian defector, into a pipeline that shoots him across the border to the western area where he's safe from KGB.
And he's like, how many people have done this before? You're the first.
Yeah, yeah. He's in like an escape pod.
Oh, yeah.
Like literally an escape pod. The pods are meant to like clean the pipes.
Oh, tell you what, there's a lot of pipes being cleaned in this movie.
Okay. Oh, all right, that's enough. Sandro's being cancelled. And so he this one's been modified to take a human. I like this. This is very cool.
Yeah.
It was funny when he shoots past and everyone looks at the pipes like, what the fuck was that?
So stupid.
Oh, actually, there were a few lines in there that seemed really relevant to these days.
I know exactly what you're going to say.
Uh-oh.
If they close the border, how will I escape? And also, wear the mask, breathe normally.
I wrote those down as well.
I just thought, I've heard that so many times recently.
So he's escaped. He's in Austria.
Yeah.
Q's there and helps him into a jet. And he flies off to England, I guess.
England. Yeah,
Bond's spy friend is like, why didn't you kill the sniper? What's up with all this?
And then Bond, who's only just got the job, says, because the guy threatens to report that he deliberately missed and all of that, didn't kill the sniper. Mm. And Bond's actually got a good response, and then he's got this weird implication that he doesn't even want the job. He says, look, I only kill professionals. That woman hardly knew one end of the rifle from another. And that's... a fair enough justification. But then he also said, oh, whatever, tell him. He'll fire me and maybe I'll welcome it or something like that.
Yeah, that was weird.
That was weird.
That was a weird line. He also says the name of the movie. He says, whoever she was, it must have scared the living daylights out of her.
Ha-ha! Living Daylights!
It's a strange title for this movie.
Yeah, it's got nothing to do with the story of the plot, really. Like, they were probably finished writing the film and they're like, oh, shit, we've got to name it something. Well, Bond says scares the living daylights out of her. Yeah, let's go with that.
Well, the short story is called The Living Daylights as well. I haven't read it, so maybe there's more of a reason in that. maybe there's something like, we're going to destroy the world and it's going to be nighttime forever. I don't
know. Just kill everyone.
You would make a good Bond villain. I'm going to destroy the sun, so it's going to be nighttime forever. Therefore, my nightclubs can stay open 24/7.
I'm a vampire as well.
And then we get to the Q scene and the Money Penny scene with the ghetto blaster.
Yep.
Oh, dear.
It's just a giant boombox that shoots torpedoes.
Shoots rockets.
And then Bond is given gadgets which actually
yep.
make a lot of sense, and they're not over the top. That's something I don't like about the Pierce Brosnan gadgets. They feel so gadgety.
Oh, they're bad. What? And there's also, like, he gets, like, 10 every movie, and the scene goes yeah. on forever. Yeah. Whereas in this, it's just one.
He makes use of the same one, pretty much. Which is yeah. really good.
Yes. I mean, the gadgets on here, the car was a little more ridiculous, where it has a laser tire.
That's true.
Oh, yeah. And the physics of that didn't work at all. Like, he didn't cut the tires for some reason, but then he did cut enough of the rest of the car to go flying off the top of it when they break, but whatever. So he's given those gadgets, and I quite like the gadgets. It wasn't over the top. That's how I judge gadgets in James Bond movies. Sometimes they just feel gimmicky, not just gadgety. They're gimmicky. Just
yeah,
so
yeah.
That they can...
You don't want them to be deus machinas
exactly.
or of their own. Like,
yeah.
this yes. thing can destroy the sun with a click of the end of the
and,
pen.
And as it know? Turns out, the enemy needs the sun to survive, so let's kill the sun, or whatever. Ah. And then he's sent to the safe house where Koskov, is that his name?
Yes.
Yeah, I thought it was Dracov, yep. but that's Black Widow.
That is Black Widow, yeah.
Yeah, so that's where he's being held. That's where he's talking with the Brits. And that's also where our resident would-be Jaws turns up.
Oh, I love this character, and I love this
scene. I like
scene.
Him. I don't like the stunts in this scene.
Oh, no, it's good. I mean, it's stupid, but it's very good. So there's this... Is he Russian or is he American? I don't know.
He wasn't American, was he? He was Russian.
No, he wasn't. But he's very good at accents. I did like that
oh, right, yeah.
layer for the character. Because he runs into the milkman and he says, oh, sorry, sir. And the guy goes, oh, bloody Yanks. And then he goes back to the milk truck. And then the Yank is there. And he yanks him around the throat with his Walkman cable. And he chokes him.
I like whenever he does this, the music from his device gets really loud.
So, the guy can hear the music and he kind of shrugs and goes, what is that? And then he's killed. It was a pretty good scene in that regard.
It's good. It sounded like he was listening to a James Bond theme song, though, which is
Yeah, he was. He was. So not only... So he's listening to that, which is a cutesy little reference, but also... He uses it to mask the sound of him strangling someone.
Which is good.
But also, it's really stupid.
Oh, it's so
well,
dumb.
Not as stupid as what comes up next. There's a great fight scene in the kitchen because he's slowly working his way into the building where Koskov is being witness protected, basically. And he takes out a few of them, but then another British agent sees him, and there's a great scene in the kitchen where they fight, and it's really brutal.
Yeah.
Like, the guy gets his face put on the stove, and it gets burnt, and then they've got a meat carver, and they try to cut him with that, and they're bashing each other with pots and pans. It's really cool.
I do like the fact that he snuck in as a milkman.
Well, that's purely to introduce one element of his infiltration. Which is that his milk bottles are grenades.
Exactly.
But also that the guard was just like, oh, there's a new milkman. Eh, whatever, go in.
That was good.
Yeah, exactly.
But yeah, he's got milk bottles that explode when he throws them at people. And it's so dumb.
Stupid.
But I'd love this.
Stupid.
I love this so much.
Oh, that was great.
It's so good.
I think this milk's gone bad.
Hey.
And then there's a bit where after he's thrown one of them, I think it's Koskov and one of the other guards sees him, and Koskov just goes, KGB, and starts running.
That's great.
We did miss one key point of exposition just before he infiltrates the safe house. So Koskov says that his boss, KGB General Pushkin, has made a list of Western spies, so both the CIA and MI6 spies for both of them, a list of them.
Yep.
That he wants to kill. And this could lead to a nuclear war, because of course it does, it's a James Bond movie. And he's like, you gotta kill General Pushkin, You gotta kill him, Mr. Bomb.
Look, you're a walking time bomb, and you've gotta kill him.
You've gotta kill him. And Bond's like, suspicious. But before he has a time to raise his suspicions, Mr. Milkman comes in and knocks out Koskov, dresses up as a doctor, and takes him away on a helicopter.
Oh no, he's been kidnapped by the KGB.
And then the next scene, that makes us the laughing stock of the intelligence community.
Yeah. I think you became that when you hired Roger Moore, MI6.
And then we're back seeing Q again, seeing the car. And there's a funny little gag where he's inside it, kind of bending inside it, stands up just as they're lowering the roof to add onto it. And he bumps his head and he's like, oh dear.
Yes.
Bond is like, watch your head.
Uh-huh. Yes.
Bond has a few quips, and I like his quips that he says.
Yeah.
That's the sort of, like, level of comedy thing where it's like a bit of brevity against the seriousness of the situation, you know?
It's not to the point of like, I thought Christmas only came once per year, he says while making out with someone called Christmas. It's not that level of no. awful that we get in the 90s, feels a little bit like Captain America quips, like early Captain America quips, where it's not, it's not like Tony Stark quippy. But it's still funny.
Yeah. He's here to get the job done, but he'll throw in a line.
And the thing about Dalton is he's got a cheeky glimmer in his eyes and he delivers it so well.
Yeah. Oh, he's so good. Yeah, he gets a key ring, Zach.
Yes.
He does.
But it's not just any key ring. You see, but this is a sexy key ring.
What?
Yes. For when you see a sexy lady and wolf whistle, it'll explode.
Is that a keyring in your pocket or are you just happy to see me?
That does lead to one of the best jokes in the movie, though, the wolf whistle thing. So
that was good. The key reacts to certain whistles. So one of them, if you sing or whistle Old Britannia, it sends out a nerve agent gas type thing that knocks people out.
Yes.
And if you wolf whistle, it explodes.
Which is pretty cool. I like the gadget. It also has a key that can unlock 80% of blocks. Yeah, he's got a skeleton key on it as well.
And then he also gets his car, which is an Aston Martin, right?
Yeah.
It's a return to their partnership with Aston Martin, because I don't think the previous few Bond cars were. So now that he's kitted out, he's like, all right, I've got to find... what's the deal with Pushkin? I could go ask him. Or I could track down that blonde lady.
I know which one. Oh, jeez. Let's go after this random blonde lady. I'm sure it matters.
So he flies to Russia or whatever, someplace.
I think it's still Russia, yeah.
And he finds the cellist, and he watches her rehearse, and then follows her home on a tram.
Not creepy at all.
No, he's green flags all round with this guy.
There's certainly flags. He's keeping his distance. He's just sort of following her. She doesn't really notice because it seems like she's not that well trained in the old espionage stuff.
And she's on edge because Pushkin is looking for her.
Yes.
We get some goons, like, drag her off the tram.
Yep. She leaves her cello on the tram with Bond. And so he picks up the case.
Yeah, he picks it up.
That's the bit that sucked the most for her, because if Bond hadn't picked that up, she would have left a $150,000 cello just on a tram. Oh, wait, no, it isn't.
Or maybe it was a sniper rifle with a hole in it.
I forgot. Yeah, that's right. It was actually just a box with a rifle in it.
And he looks inside it, he looks at the ammo, and it's like, wait a second, these are blanks! The ammo's blanks! Oh, what's going on here?
Things are starting to click into place. Mm-hmm. There's some suspicious shenanigans going on.
So he goes over to her home.
Yeah.
He just walks into her home, she's like, who the hell are you?
Again, green flags.
Many green flags.
Yeah.
And he's like, well, I'm here to return your cello, but also, my name is Bond and I'm a spy. And I was like, oh, you're just telling her everything straight off the bat.
Well, he didn't say it's spy who for. That was the thing, right?
Exactly. And also, this might be why he only had two films. Oh, I'm not meant to tell them that? Oh, sorry.
Yeah. It's not that the audience didn't respond well to Dalton. It's just that the spy using the name of James Bond at this point was just killed really early on.
Yeah, exactly.
So he's like, I'm here to take you to what's-his-face. Yeah, definitely. And she's like, oh, you're here to pick me up for, what's he called, Koskov?
Koskov, yes.
Koskov. He said he would send someone for me. Yeah, you're here to pick. And he's like, yeah, I'm definitely the agent for Koskov.
Yeah, where did you say you were going to meet him again? Vienna. Oh, yeah, I knew that. Let's go.
And he might not actually be there because we need to keep moving him around a lot to keep him safe.
It's not the fact that I have no idea where he is.
Now just get in my car and I'll drive you away.
Green flags all around. So he does the classic trick.
Everyone does the classic trick,
which is she walks into a phone box, waits for a tram to drive past, hiding you from the KGB agent across the road. Then you place a dummy in the phone box and then jump into James Bond's car. A classic trick. Everyone does it.
And then, as they're about to drive off, she says, "No, I need my cello." And he goes, "What? Oh, okay, we'll go get it." And then I love the line. As soon as they got it, stuffed it in the back of a pretty small car, he goes, "Why couldn't you have played the violin?"
Yeah. It's great.
That cello leads to some really good lines that I really like from him.
Yeah, true.
That's some good quips.
Which basically is, because they're escaping, guards are put up on the border on the highways.
Yeah, the police are after them.
Yeah, and there's some great action goes on there. Including the laser tire that you mentioned.
Yeah, his car's got a laser tire.
But eventually they lose the car. They have to get out of it. And they're on a hill. I loved this scene so much. He opens the case of the cello. They sit in either side of it. And he uses the cello to steer down this snowy mountain.
Yep.
And he goes, "I'm glad I insisted you bought the cello." And the whole thing, there's great humor and great action at the same time. Yep. It's ridiculous stunt work, but it's awesome at the same time. And then he's a bit cheeky about himself. He's like, "It actually turned out to be useful that you bought it."
Yeah. Oh, it's good. Yeah, yeah. Hey, Zach, what about the scene where they're about to drive over the frozen river and they enter one of those, like, fishing boat shed things?
Yes, this whole scene was great. First, there was a car chase where he cut a car in half with a laser tire.
Good stuff.
Then he blew up a truck with rockets out the front, obviously. Mm-hmm. A car must have.
As you do.
It's a Bond car.
Yeah. Then he takes a wrong road because he has to get around some tanks to a frozen lake.
Yep.
At the frozen lake, there's just a guy chilling, you know, setting up a boat, perhaps putting it in storage for the winter because the lake's frozen over.
Mm-hmm.
Unfortunately, he's not going to be able to put it in storage as the storage is going with the car.
Yeah.
As the car drives into the shed and the shed is lifted and carried with the car.
And then there's a great bit where the police car follows Bond onto the road after blowing one of the tires off. But he uses that to his advantage, drives around in a circle, cuts the ice in a perfect circle, and traps them on the cut ice.
Oh, and then he uses the rocket boost to fly, to drive away.
And then he turns the car into a ski car. It was pretty cool.
Yeah. Bond blows up Q's car once again.
Yeah.
And all I could think was, poor Q.
To be fair, Q gave him a self-destruct button.
Yeah. Shouldn't have given him a self-destruct button.
Don't blow
button.
Up the car, unless you really have to, and here's the button for it.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And then they slide down the slope in a cello case.
Oh, they cross the border and he says, "We've got nothing to declare."
Except a cello.
Alright, we cut to the biggest twist in the movie. It's such a big twist that the movie makes absolutely no twist sound effects or anything with it. It's actually just like, yeah, it's a part of the story.
Yeah.
It turns out Koskoff and the milkman have been working together.
What?
And they're making deals with this American guy, Mr. Whitaker. He's American. He loves war. He's got a wax work museum. There's Hitler in it.
I love ancient warlords that murdered thousands of people. Pew, pew,
pew. That was honestly a great gag, though, where it shows this waxwork museum of all these great military leaders. And then he's standing there very still and then he moves. I thought it worked really well.
That was good.
Yeah, he's got like Genghis Khan and I think he's got Vladimir as well, the Impaler.
Yes.
You know, it's very on the nose. Hey, he likes all these people that murdered a lot of people.
He likes violence.
Later on, he says the line like, at one of, because he's got these big tables with miniatures depicting battle scenes.
Yes.
Because he's just obsessed with this. And one of the lines he says is like, oh, in one of the battles, he's like, this general should have sacrificed 10,000 more men, could have ended the rebellion right there, sort of thing. You know? Like, he's criticizing them and saying he should have sacrificed more lives. And it's like, so you're not a good guy, huh? Think this guy might be bad.
Mm-hmm.
So he is meeting with General Pushkin, who is the KGB general guy from earlier. He's talking about how he's ordering a bunch of weapons from this guy.
Wasn't it that they had paid for it, but then he was like, no, we don't actually want the guns. We're like,
yeah,
I'm gonna take back the money. We don't actually want them anymore.
Yeah, the order's cancelled.
Yes.
Yeah, yeah. And the guy's like, well, I already smuggled these weapons. You can't. There's no takesy-backsies.
Exactly. You've got to pay for them.
You got to pay for these guns.
And that's when Kozkov comes in. He's like, I just need to get a little bit of money. Then I can get the guns.
And what does he do? Drugs.
Yeah. And also we see Kozkov meeting with Whitaker.
Oh, yes.
And they plan about how, yeah, they're trying to get Bond to kill Pushkin, because then once they do that, they can make the deal, get the weapons, start a war.
Yeah, yes. Yeah. They're preparing to start a war. And he faked defecting so that he could give the secret agents false information that Pushkin was trying to murder all these agents. So yes, they wanted 007 to kill Pushkin so that he, like, they could start a war.
Yeah. You know, convoluted, complicated, but it makes sense when you're watching the movie. Everything is explained to you really well.
It's not too bad.
Meanwhile, Bond and Kara, they're just having dates. They're just doing dates.
They look pretty lovely together in a lovely city, and they're having dates.
Yeah, they're age appropriate.
And she's asking about, are we going to meet up with him yet? And he's like, oh, well, we'll see him soon. We'll see him soon.
Let's go on a Ferris wheel where I'm just going to make out with you.
Mm-hmm.
Even though you're like, maybe not.
Yeah.
He's still got to go confront Pushkin, because that's, of course, where everything happens. We do get an action sequence where the milkman becomes balloon man and then Bond goes around scaring kids with balloons, but we'll talk about
And his friend's killed by balloon man.
Yeah, no, that was pretty brutal, the death. Like,
yeah.
It was this massive sliding door.
Why does the sliding door, like, run on, like, a giant piston of death?
The thing I loved but also felt really sorry for the owner of the place was Bond runs over, checks on the guy, and then the owner's there behind him like, oh God, somebody's just been murdered in my workplace.
Yeah, no.
That's true.
He's probably going to get the blame for it.
He is.
I thought he was putting like a bomb on the like door.
So did I. I thought everyone in the room was about to be killed or wounded.
Yeah.
But no, instead you had this ridiculous door contraption that we don't see it, but he gets like squished in it, and it's like, oh my God, that was.
Yeah.
Why does this door exist?
Yeah. Yeah. Seems like a work hazard.
Yeah. Seems like someone could get killed.
Work safe should probably get on there.
Yeah. maybe the shop owner did deserve to get sued for this.
Maybe. You shouldn't have had the piston exposed. That's your problem, mate. You got to pay the fine.
So Bond's still got to track down Pushkin, though, see what Pushkin's got to say about everything. So he travels to Morocco to meet up with him, sneaks his way into the general's bedchambers, where the general is meeting with a woman.
And the woman doesn't look very happy, so Pushkin's like, what is wrong? And then suddenly a silenced gun is pointed at him.
And then the door closes. Uh-oh, it's James Bond. He's here to kill you. And he's like, oh, man. I don't want to
die. They're talking... But a guard comes in, and Bond's like, I've got to distract the guard. How am I going to do this? I know, I'll tear off the woman's shirt and distract the guard with boobs.
The classic boob distraction.
Tits out for distraction.
That was probably the biggest red flag in this whole movie, was that.
Yeah, that one. I think that one's on Bond, to be honest.
That one's kind of gross.
Yeah, because it wasn't that he tried to communicate it to her. He grabbed her, turned her around, and tore her top off her.
Yeah, that was that was the grossest moment in the film for sure.
Yeah, they could have been like, can you seduce the guard when he comes in or something like that? Like, nope.
Let's just terrify you and strip you down. Yeah, it wasn't good.
Not good. So he's talking with Pushkin. Pushkin's got no clue what's going on with this list of agents he wants dead or something. He's like, I didn't write that. What are you talking about, Bond?
And Bond's like, yeah, I know. I don't trust the other guy at all.
Yeah.
But if we're going to find out what his plan is, you have to die. And he's like, well, I guess I have to die.
Yes.
Cut to next scene where he's alive. Wait, what?
Wait, what? That's a bit weird, but he's putting on a press conference, and Bond shoots him.
While we've been seeing Milkman, Balloon Man, KGB, Spy Man.
Just an all-round man.
Kind of like setting up and taking over the control of the spotlight from the, you know, the tech crew who's there, who he's knocked out and broken his glasses, the bastard. And then he's kind of standing there waiting for the opportunity, gets his gun out, he's about to fire, but Bond shoots first. So he turns the spotlight onto James Bond and he's being chased.
Yes, and he does a rooftop chase. He runs across roofs, grabs on like antennas and stuff to like...
And then lets it go and it whacks one of the other ones in the face.
Exactly. It's a classic, almost cliche action sequence for a Bond film, but I think this might have been the first time that they did it, which is pretty cool.
I think so, yeah. There's a lot of running through clotheslines as well. In fact, James Bond gets told off by a woman who's hanging up the clothes.
And then we, of course, see that Pushkin is alive as well.
Yeah. It was pretty obvious when you see him in the next scene alive, and it's like, well, hang on.
And he takes off a bloodied vest.
Oh, yeah. Oh, well, yeah. This is the first time. I'm glad that James Bond is a good shot, was the line, I think.
Haha. Really, I liked that line. That was a very clever line.
And then Bond is reunited with Kara. She's grumpy at him for, like, you know, endangering her life, for disappearing, and what's going on? You're not telling me. And that's basically her dialogue for the rest of the film. What's going on? You're not telling me.
She doesn't really do much for the rest of the movie, unfortunately. But that's a fine.
No.
Because green flags all around.
Yeah.
Great.
Yeah.
That's a new trope, isn't it? Green flags. Love it. So he tells her the truth. He's like, look, here's the thing. I work for spies and spies.
And I was the one who shot at you.
And I just, that's right. I gave you that bruise. Yes, I did. And also that Koskoff guy, a bit of a bad bloke, really.
Also, can I have a drink? Wait, what is in this?
Hold on a second. You drugged me. And she's like, I did drug you. I kind of wish you told me all that before I gave you the drink, because I believe you, but I've drugged you. And Koskoff's on his way here and he's going to put us on a plane.
Oh, no.
And then the KGB guy pops in and is like, knock, knock, someone order a doctor.
Hey. And then she's like, oh, I did order a doctor, but I don't have any way to pay for it.
Oh, no.
Oh, wait, I think I started watching a different movie.
Different movie. Green flags.
Green flags all around.
Green flags. I like this. Once again, they do another, like, their medical teams where they dress up as doctors again. If it works once, why don't it work twice, you know? Yeah,
exactly.
This time they get an art.
An art.
Even a working heart to help with their disguise. Mm.
And they put the art in some ice and then they try to transport it for our art transfusion.
You try to say transfusion with an accent?
I was. I was going to say plant and then I realised, is it transfusion or transplant in that situation?
Transplant.
They've also got a fake ID for Bond in this scene so they can get him into Afghanistan. And the Bond says, Jerry Bolov. Great.
That was so stupid. So they're transporting him with this heart, which in the ice, I believe, is the diamonds.
Yes.
That they're hiding so that they can use them in a trade deal that we find out later on.
Yeah, a little bit later on.
The heart is an animal heart.
Yeah.
But obviously the guard that checked out on it wasn't an expert on human anatomy.
He's a guard. He's not a doctor.
Well, I would have immediately been suspicious, though, because it's not heart-shaped. They would have been like, that's not a human heart. It's not heart-shaped. What's going on here? A bit suspicious.
Boo.
Yeah, I wouldn't want to receive this for Valentine's.
Yeah. I would, because it's probably a heart transplant, and I bloody need that. I'll take it on Valentine's Day. I don't care what day it is.
The waiting list is pretty long.
Yeah. So they arrive at a Russian military base in Afghanistan, and they're thrown into the little holding cell that they have there.
And it says, this is James Bond, put him in the cell. And her, too, she's a defector.
Yes.
So he's picked up on that.
And she's like, what? But I was helping you. And the guy's like, yes, but I am a bad guy. So I am doing bad guy things. She's like, oh, man, you were the bad guy. It was really weird how they talked about
it.
Like
was
that.
It was an odd moment, yeah.
And then we have the most stereotypical cell block guard in the world, where, you know, he's enjoying his job, he loves being cruel to people. Bond drops something, or someone drops something, and Bond goes to pick it up, and he goes, I didn't say you could get down, and he hits him. And then Bond goes to get up, I didn't say you could get up! And it's just laughing the whole time.
Yeah, he's a bit of a jerk. Also in the prison cell block area,
Art Malik
is, who is the leader of the Afghanistan resistance in the area.
Yeah, and I noticed they couldn't just have him be Afghanistan. He had to then switch to speaking with a British accent.
Yes.
Because, you know, we can't relate to them at all back in those days.
I wrote that down. Yeah. I think there was something in there where he did come from England, though.
No, it was actually brown face, which is a bit wrong.
Yeah.
Anyway, I found it really annoying he couldn't just keep up being from that part of the world. He had to be a British spy himself of some sort, or a British agent.
Mm.
The escape scene was good, though. I loved the camera work when they're hiding behind stuff and it goes to handheld cameras and the camera's hiding.
That was really good. Mm. I did laugh a little bit when Kara hits a guy with a bucket, except she uses the wrong end of the bucket.
Yeah, I remember that.
Yeah. But it still works, so it's fine.
Yeah.
It does.
That was an odd moment. But yeah, that whole escape sequence was pretty good.
And this is where the music actually gets good. I quite like it. It's big, soaring music, which you often get for vast plains of deserts and stuff like that. So it's kind of stereotypical for a film in that regard, but it's pleasant sounding. I liked it.
Yeah.
That was cool.
They go off with all the resistant fighters, and Bond's like, I need your help to stop the bad guy. But he's like, I can't spare the men. Instead, how about you help us on a job tomorrow? And that job is transporting opium to these two brothers who are going to sell that opium to Koskov to get the months so that they can sell the opium and get the weapons.
So, you know, it's a big shipment of green flags.
Yeah.
And they're like, well, hey, can we not sell them to the bad guys? And the guy's like, gotta make money, man. Soz fam.
How about the scene where Bond puts his knife into the opium and tastes it?
Yeah, I know. So does Milkman.
Yeah, that's what they do.
I mean, that would explain the rest of the action sequence. They're both just really high, which is why they're doing these dumb stunts.
Oh, yeah. Yes. That whole fight, both of them are on opium when they're fighting.
Bond, are you really in a condition to be flying a plane? Of course I am. Which way's up again?
Name's Bond. James Bond.
Name's James. James. Wait, no, that's not right.
James.
Bond James. Hey. What?
So they're putting the opium in the back of one of the Russian trucks, and Bond hides in the back of the truck so that he can get back into the Russian base. And he also plants a bomb. Wait, no, that's later.
Is he not carrying the bomb at that point? Because the guy comes along and inspects the bag or the sachet that he's holding. I was worried that he might have found the bomb and found out it was Bond, but because it was Milkman.
Yes.
Yeah. I liked the whole like scene where he picks one bag to test that it's opium, and it just so happens to be the one that Bond's carrying, and they're like right next to each other.
Tension and a lot of convenience and a lot of
you know. Classic like random just so happens.
Yeah. The truck arrives back in the base, and Bond gets out of the truck and joins in the transportation of the opium from the truck to the plane that Koskov's going to be using to fly it out of there. I think they said something like it's like $500 million worth of opium. That's a lot.
Yeah, it was a lot of money. It was a lot of money.
And also plants a little bomb on the plane as well. But before he gets a chance to leave the plane,
everyone sees him.
Everyone sees him. And the milkman's like, oh, it's you, isn't it?
Oh, yeah.
Oh, that's not good, is it?
I'm gonna wreck you, mate. You one of these guns.
Yeah. The countdown is for 10 minutes. But then for about 25 minutes, there's action going on.
It's a long action scene, but it's good action.
There's a bit where eventually the other British agent brings the horde of good, you know, the guys working with him along. And he's right. He's got this excavator of some sort. And they throw a grenade at him. Mm. He catches it and then drives it at the machine gun where they are. I thought that was just quirky. That was pretty cool.
The action sequence is good,
Some fun action.
Oh, he uses the excavator to destroy some toilets as well, and we see some buns.
Oh, yeah, we see some bottoms.
Yep, some more nudity.
Who very conveniently turn away from the camera, so it's just bottoms.
Yeah.
There's some fun action. The bad guys are like, what the heck is going on? You know, and Bond takes control of the plane that has all the opium on it.
Mm.
Oh, and it's also got those wooden stops in the front of it to stop it from rolling. So he has to rev the engine a little bit, basically, to get over them.
Yeah.
That was good.
Yeah.
So he starts up the plane. What's it, lady? She's like, oh no, Bond's leaving without me.
For some reason, she wants to get on the plane with him, despite the fact that's where all the guns are pointed.
Well, she manages to, like, fight off some guys here, and I was like, oh, okay.
She does pretty good there.
Yeah.
Like, that guy jumps on the car and she like beats him off it.
That was cool.
Like, hey, she's getting in on the action a bit. I didn't expect that, honestly.
That was good.
And she manages to drive onto the plane, but not before the bad guys catch up, and unbeknownst to Bond, Milkman manages to jump
into the plane.
Yes.
Yes. That was a great sequence. The driving after the plane, the driving onto it, him getting on there, that was really good.
I have to commend, this guy really knows how to deliver milk. Like, he's committed.
Oh, yeah. You know. Sir, your latest order. Here it is.
Yeah.
Stop throwing grenades at me. I want to give you your milk.
Yeah.
Oh, another plane coming in as well.
Yeah, we get a bunch of, like, Mission Impossible-esque style stunts because they've got the two planes.
Yeah.
Kind of flying over each other because another plane is landing, so Bond has to quickly pull up his plane so he can just fly over. We see the two planes actually in the same shot, which looked very impressive.
Yeah, very cool.
It could have been miniatures, but it looked pretty good.
I think what they did for that one is they just had a plane sitting there and they did a low fly.
Yeah, that might have been it.
But cut it to look like he just flew over the plane as it lifted off, which I thought was quite good.
Yeah, true.
It was good.
And then that one flies into the supposedly defecting general's car.
What? Yeah. Giant fucking explosion goes off and I'm like, oh, Krustoff's dead. Next scene. Oh, yeah. He hops out of the car. He's fine.
All that happens is that his gelled hair gets slightly messy.
Yeah.
Oh, not his gelled hair. He's practically dead at this point.
They could have killed him and had no, like, he doesn't need to be alive for the end of the movie.
We could have had a minute less of the film of him getting arrested, basically.
Yeah, it didn't matter at all, which was
But I guess at this point, Dalton kills a lot of people in License to Kill. I mean, he kills people in this one as well, obviously. But he does kill a lot of people in License to Kill.
Are you saying in a film called License to Kill, there's death?
Yes. Well, he kills so many people, though, that it's almost like, it's a bit of a some issues there. Whereas
one doesn't feel like a green flag, actually.
Yeah. Although, actually, Brosnan does kill more people.
Oh, yeah.
Brosnan's a bit of a psychopath.
Don't worry. The bad guy lived. Green flags all around.
Green flags all around.
Speaking of living, the next bad guy, not so much. We have an epic fight out.
Then there's an excellent sequence where I actually started to feel pretty tense because the countdown, finally, after 25 minutes, the 10-minute countdown is close to being up.
Mm. Yeah, no, this had so much tense things going on. So you have one, the milkman there. He's really trying to deliver that milk. And so Bond is fighting him, and then the lady's like, I'm going to help him by...
And opens the back of the plane.
It's like, what are you doing, lady?
And then Italy knocked out by the parcel of the drugs.
Yeah, the drugs fall out the back.
Speaking of which, there's going to be a desert full of drugs after this. So.
Yeah, it's great.
Then she starts lowering the plane, so it's flapping around everywhere. And then you spend a good minute or two fighting each other and cutting the rope a little bit so some of the drugs go flying away. It's really intense.
So they're hanging off this giant package of drugs. The drugs are flying out of the plane. They're fighting each other. The ropes are flaying, and there's a bomb counting down that's about to explode.
Yeah.
It's very intense.
I didn't love the music in this moment because it goes back to the drums theme thing, but all the action was very tense.
Very good, very good.
About that stunt, though, the milkman gets to the point where he's holding onto Bond's boot and Bond starts cutting the laces. Yeah. He could have just put his hand through the net.
Yeah, he could have just grabbed the net again.
But he's like, no, don't cut that. Even though there's rope, I could literally grab onto here.
And what should have happened was Bond was a little bit lower on the net, so he was literally just hanging by the boot.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
yeah, yeah. Yeah. I see your point, but I raise you the movie had to end.
No, it didn't.
Well, did it, though? Because it still goes on for like 15 minutes after this.
Actually, you're right. Point taken away.
All right, but
eventually, like I said, he cuts his boot off and the guy goes flying, still holding the boot too.
Yep.
This has the best line when he hops back into the cockpit and she's like, what happened to the guy? And he says, he got the boot.
I saw that line coming from a mile away, though, to be honest, but still.
Yeah, put the boot in it. That was good.
And then he stops it with 2 seconds left to go on the countdown.
Oh, yeah. He stops the bomb. Luckily, on this bomb, there was just an off button.
Yeah.
I loved that. I loved that it's this realistic bomb that he just has to switch off. Like, it's not like a bunch of buttons or whatever. He just presses one button.
I also like, for once, it wasn't with 7 seconds left to go, so it said 007.
Oh, yeah. You're right there.
And so he actually fishes around in some of the Hessian sacks a few times to try and find the right one, and then he gets it, which I also like. He didn't know immediately which one, so the desperation's still there. Yep. He goes to the cockpit. She turns around to say hello to him, and he's like, pull up, we're about to fly into a mountain.
Yeah. And they've left a couple hanging threads that he's going to tie up. One, the resistance fighters are running away from the army
with tanks, whereas the resistance fighters only have their horses.
Yes. So to help him out, as they're crossing over a bridge, he drops the bomb on the bridge once all the resistance fighters are across the bridge, just to stop the army from catching up with them.
Yeah.
And that's nice. That's a nice thing to do, Bond. Good on you.
That was nice.
That is a green flag.
That is. It's good, wholesome protecting people.
Mm.
But now they're out of fuel. The plane's out of fuel. What are they going to do?
Well, you got to get out of here. What's the one vehicle we have on hand to drive on out of here? Of course. Let's drive out of here in the car.
Which has got a parachute on it.
Yeah, makes sense.
Yeah.
So they drive through the air out of the plane.
And then the plane crashes.
The plane then dips and explodes in classic fashion.
And then they're not too far away from somewhere that I can't remember, but he goes, it's lovely this time of year, basically.
Yes.
Oh, Karachi, that's where it was.
And that is the end of the movie.
Bit more.
Still got another 10 minutes of exposition to go through.
We've still got an American general who's obsessed with war to kill.
Oh yeah, we do have to kill the American general.
Yeah, don't forget about the American general shootout. That was so important to the plot.
I actually have a lot of problems with the American general shootout, because Bond shows up, they talk, it's good. The American general's so over the top that it's really fun. But they start doing a shootout, and the American general, he's got this futuristic gun.
Yeah. He's got multiples.
Well, he's got a whole arsenal there, which I quite like. They set it up earlier.
And yeah, he's got one that's got a face shield on it, and when he's shooting that gun, Bond keeps going for headshots, and I'm like, just shoot him in the leg, the arm, literally any other place that's not shielded.
It did feel
like a video game level. We have to shoot them in the leg, then they bend over going, ow, and then you could get the headshot.
Yeah.
And then he uses the wolf whistle trick from his gadget. Puts it on the back of a statue, waits until the general's standing there, then he wolf whistles and it blows up and hits him in the face.
I love how the general's like, yeah, the fuck did you just say to me? And then it falls on him.
Yeah, because he wolf whistles at him and he's like, huh?
Whitaker's actually dead as well. They actually kill him.
I think they do, yeah.
Which, surprising, I guess.
The Brits killed an American. That's got to go down well.
Pushkin walks in, they've arrested Koskov.
And then it finishes with a performance by our lovely cellist.
She's on a world tour. Yeah.
Then she goes backstage, upset because Bond wasn't there. And then he whistles, and then they're in a room together. And then, of course, you can imagine what they get up to.
Just like every single Bond movie, it ends with them making out.
Yeah, they only make out. That's all they do.
Because this is a PG film.
And it's a green flag.
Yep. But anyway, that's the end of The Living Daylights right there. That is surprisingly not a super long synopsis. I thought we might go on for a little bit longer, but we got through that nicely. Because there is a lot of plot in this movie.
Oh, yeah. Mm,
that was a lot. That was a lot.
But it's delivered pretty well. They're a good little moments of exposition, then you get a nice action sequence, and then some more, but not in a regimented way. It just flows quite naturally.
Yeah. Is it an oldie or is it a goodie? I really like this one, and it is one of my favourite Bond films. I don't know if I prefer it more or less than License to Kill. I quite like that one as well.
I definitely think the woman roles are a bit dated, but overall, I think the film itself is a goodie. I quite enjoyed it.
Mm.
There's a lot worse films for women roles, I'll say.
Yeah.
A lot better.
We've seen worse this year. Again, Alan Quatermain comes to mind, which is doing a similar sort of thing.
Oof.
Okay, so goodie from you. Yeah, I'm going to give it a goodie as well. I really like it. It's a fun one.
I was going to say, I'll give it a goodie as well, but I just find it hard. Some of the attitudes are obviously oldies and really dated, but no, it's good. The action's great. I love Dalton. I really liked the dynamic between all the lead characters, be they antagonist and protagonist. It was good.
Three goodies there for The Living Daylights. We could do the add and remove segment, but I think we all know what each of our add and remove would be. My add is character for Kara. My remove is all the creepy stuff.
And then it'll be a half an hour long film, surely.
No, you've still got the extra half an hour for the end scene, so it'd be at least 1 hour.
That's true.
Oh, of course.
That's my add and remove. How about you, Reese?
Yeah, definitely character for Kara. After the initial setup, she did have an air of mystery about her when all the green flags on the tram were happening. That was, you know, it was very interesting. And then, just like in the most recent Bond film too with Craig, the character went from really interesting with something to do with the actual plot to just feeling worried for James and all of that, and it was annoying. So maybe I actually could just remove that bit where she is devoid of character. I don't know.
Yeah, well, not to reiterate what you guys are saying, obviously I agree, but on a different note, I would remove some of the stuff from the end. I think the end took forever.
Mm-hmm.
I think you could have... I think you could have just got maybe the action scene and then cut to, what's his name, Pusky?
Yeah, that's not his name at all, but sure.
That's not even close. Okay. Big, I'm going to call him Big P. Big P.
yep.
And maybe the American and him, like, I don't know. You could have cut out some stuff. I feel like the movie ended several times over. Yeah. At the end there, and I feel like it could have been cut down a little bit just to make the film a little less long.
Yeah,
although
yeah.
It wasn't bad.
No.
So, saying that, I don't know what you would cut out, you know. Maybe
you just tighten it up a little bit. There are some films, and I know this is going to be somewhat controversial, but I don't mind The Phantom Menace, for example, but it's too long and feels slow, but that's because almost every scene lingers on a shot for too long. But if you tightened that up, I think it would jump along at a much better pace.
What you could have is the guy, you know, the smuggler dude.
Oh, yeah.
You could have just been like, oh, yeah, he's on board.
Mm, yeah, true.
And you could skip to them doing the trade and then them immediately attacking.
That is true. That's like 6-7 minutes, I think, gone if you just do that. That would help.
Yeah,
that would
definitely help. More than that, I think. Maybe 10 minutes, I think. Just like... then immediately going, they make the trade and then immediately attack and you just get to that action scene real quick.
I would probably as well cut out everything with Moneypenny, because what is the point? I know some people are like, Moneypenny's are important to these movies. And I'm like, no, she's not.
Well, why is she treated like trash then?
Yikes.
Well, let's go through the checklist then, the checklist tropes. It's a list of tropes that we've kind of been adding to throughout the year. All the tropes we kind of noticed throughout 1987 as we've been watching through these movies. We're going to go through them, see how many it gets. Number one trope.
How many green flags does it have?
How many green flags does
it have? Oof. I don't think that's a trope. That's just like a thing. Well, it might be a trope.
No, I'm adding green flags. I'm adding green flags.
Oh, no. I guess it will apply to every 80s movie.
Yeah, so. I was going to say, you're doing the 80s, mate. Come on.
Yeah, no.
All right, first trope, does the film have dumb characters? Oblivious characters, not figuring obvious stuff out, that sort of stuff. What do you think, Rhys?
I'm not too sure. Like, it is about spies and espionage. I don't know how obvious some of the stuff was. I'm going to say no, actually.
Yeah. Bad guy from foreign country.
Isn't that any James Bond film?
Oh,
yeah.
This is where the trope originated, I feel.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It is Russian, because Koskov is Russian, but also the real bad guy, I guess it's Whitaker as well, but this is a British movie, so he's a foreigner.
Yeah, America is a foreign country.
And we're Australian, so even James Bond's foreign, so...
Yeah, they're all foreign. If we base it on a British angle, there's bad guys from a country. If we base it on an American angle, there's bad guys from a foreign country. If we base it on a Russian angle, there's the American... So, I mean, there's bad guys all around, I feel.
That's true.
You could view Bond as a bad guy because he murders so many people. So, he's from a foreign country. Yeah. So,
there is, of course, the bonus point, which we haven't actually come across for this trope in a while, is does the bad guy have ties to either Nazi Germany or the USSR? And technically, I mean, KGB.
Yeah, KGB. Yep.
We haven't actually had that in a while. All the good guys live. Of course they do. It's a Bond movie.
Yep.
All the good guys sleep with each other.
Yep. Good guy sacrifices themselves. Bond, he does heroic stuff. He never necessarily sacrifices himself because I think he's always pretty confident that he's going to get out of the scenarios.
Yeah.
Yeah.
He's also the title character, so he's got plot immunity.
Yeah.
Yeah, so that trope is usually for, like, a side character that sacrifices himself, you know?
Female lead's whole purpose is to fall in love with male lead. I don't know if there's love. I wouldn't necessarily say love.
Well, I say love on the part of all female characters in James Bond. I think he's a callous so-and-so, and he doesn't.
Actually, I would agree there. She falls in love, he doesn't. Yeah, look, I would agree with that. It gets the trope.
Yeah.
Plus, she loses all her character just to be with James Bond, so I feel like that fits in with that anyway.
Yeah.
Yeah, they could have done a whole thing where she's, like, distraught that the person she loved, you know, betrayed her, that sort of thing.
Yeah.
Wouldn't that have been a cool character arc? Never mind.
Dead animals. What do you think, Zach?
Well, there was horses and camels in that action scene, and I'm pretty sure that one horse didn't make it.
Or someone deliberately shoots the horse so that the guy falls off.
Yeah, that's the one I'm talking about.
Oh, and there's animal hearts as well.
Oh, yeah, there's an animal heart. We know for a fact we saw an animal heart. That came from an animal. That animal did not make it.
Is it a rip-off of other famous movies? Yeah, look, there's this film called Dr. No from the 60s, and I feel like this is really ripping off.
I was going to say, isn't James Bond just the template for ripping off stuff?
Yeah.
And being ripped off?
Was there slow motion Reese?
I don't think so. Was there a little bit, maybe, with one of the crashes in the action sequences?
I don't think so.
No.
Unfunny joke where the joke is that it's unfunny. No, because there aren't any...
I don't think so.
...joke jokes. It's just quips.
I don't like the, would you like another ride line?
Ooh, yeah.
Although, I think that is meant to be funny, though.
No.
I don't know.
The problem with that joke is they tried to be funny.
Okay, yeah.
There is no narration. I didn't notice any dubbing, either. It didn't end with a freeze frame, so it doesn't get that one. Does it get unlikable, likable hero, though? Because is Bond unlikable, but in a likable way? Does that make sense? He's like a bit of a bad boy, but you're rooting for him. I don't know if it gets that one.
Yeah, I don't know.
I would vote that he gets that one, because he does, like, piss everyone off that he's around. He destroys Q's cars. He disobeys orders to kill the sniper. Like, people... He's a bit of an asshole, you know? He does his own thing, but he gets the job done.
And he's played by Timothy Dalton. How can you not like Timothy Dalton?
Exactly.
Yeah.
No, on that note, when you're looking at the character, yes, I think he gets that. He's a dick. But he gets the job done. He's the most efficient dick they've got.
It's not this movie specifically, but overall, 007's character is the likable bad person sort of thing.
Yes.
Especially, I think, is it Brosnan? I think it's in the Brosnan era where they're like, everyone in the office hates him. Like, everyone hates him, but he's just good at the job, so they keep him around.
Which is good. I like that.
Is the film bad porridge, though, Reese?
That's the real question.
It is a real question. And I'm going to ask you, Sandro, to cut this and explain what it is, because I've fallen behind on listening to the podcast.
Oh, no one knows what bad porridge is, so you're fine.
No, the whole point is no one fucking knows what that fucking means.
Well, because you've got bad in that name, I don't think this film is bad, so I'm going to say no, it isn't.
Ah, well, you're wrong, because this film is full of opium, and opium in my porridge is terrible.
That's a bad porridge.
Dude, that's the best flavour
for porridge.
Or it
could be a good porridge, I guess, if you like opium.
Yeah.
I feel like... out of all of the powdered drugs, opium would have a very strong taste. I don't know why. This is something about opium.
That's fair. It's going to ruin the taste of my porridge. I'm going to give this a bad
Maybe your porridge is going to ruin the taste of my opium. So think about it that way.
Oh, that's true.
That's true. Either way, ruins it.
I know.
So bad porridge.
Hey, Zach, magnets?
Yeah, laser tires. They got to use magnets.
Magnets.
Yeah. For sure.
I mean, magnets. What do they do?
Yep.
How do they work? I don't understand.
How do they work?
I don't know. Things.
Yeah, magnets.
It does, of course, get Chekhov's bruise as well. That was...
Chekhov's bruise and Whitaker's guns.
They do come back.
Yeah.
Except they're not on the mantelpiece. They're in a drawer.
They are. Multiple drawers. Also, all of them were the sort of guns that George Lucas based the Star Wars blasters on.
Yeah, they were, weren't they?
Yeah.
No, specifically the American. He was, like, using laser blasters. They were straight from Star Wars.
All right, only for action tropes. Number one, lots of dumb goons for the hero to kill. Definitely gets that.
Yeah.
Number two, is it all blokes all the time? This film's all blokes all the bloody time, mate. You better believe it's a bloke film.
Oh, absolutely. You got the KGB blokes. You got the CIA blokes.
You've got the milkman blokes.
Oh, milkman. The milk bloke, as I like to call them.
Oh, that's a bloke right there.
Yeah, is it time for the next segment, Mr. Bloke Zach?
Oh, absolutely. It's time for rave reviews.
Ooh.
It's part of the... I tried to do a little like, Bondy.
Yeah, anyway. I like that. Good job. Good bloke.
Yeah. It was for all the blokes out there.
Yeah.
So this is the part of the show where I get the reviews from Rotten Tomatoes, the audience reviews, because as we know, the critics are always wrong.
Yeah, they're all balls. So, the critics aren't blokes. They're a bunch.
Yeah. You got to get it for the blokes in the audience. Yeah. They know what's
PC
up.
PC gone mad, I tell you what.
I'll tell you what. Because we have a guest on, our resident James Bond.
No. Today, I'm James Bloke.
James Bloke.
Sorry, yes. James Bloke. Because we've got you on, this will be a battle of intelligence. Whoa. Intelligence battle. See if you can deduce with your spy techniques what the score is better than your opponent, KGB Sandro.
Yes, I've got the Russian cheats.
Yeah. Did you
say pardon, bloke?
Russian cheats?
The Russian cheats. Oh, I've got a breath.
He's got a bad case of the Russian shits, I tell you that much. It's enough to take a good bloke down.
In Russia, you don't shit poop. Poop shits you.
Oh, no.
I hate that accent so much.
All right. So, I think you know how this one works, Reese. So, you guys ready?
Yes.
You bet you.
All right. The first review is from Google. The Google, I presume.
Google.
Oh, okay.
The organization.
Yeah. The Google, I presume.
Not one bloke, a whole organization.
Yeah, the whole organization. It's full of blokes. And it says, I like this because it's a spy movie. So, Sandro, what do you think of this high-quality review we have here?
To be fair, I think on Letterboxd, my review for Guy Ritchie's new movie, Wrath of Man, literally is, it's a heist movie, so...
Yeah, there you go.
It's a thing.
Four stars from me.
Well, this bloke sounds like he's got a pretty low threshold, and it sounds like he was happy that it did the job that it said it would on the tin. I think he gave it a 5 out of 5.
Well, you were close with 5 out of 5 because it's 4 out of 5.
Oh.
And Sandro gets the first point.
Yes, Russian cheats playing off.
Good job, bloke.
Thank you, comrade.
And unfortunately, it might continue this way because the next person is named KG.
Oh, brother.
Which I'm sure has nothing to do with the KGB.
Well, this KG bloke... KG bloke, KGB. There we go.
It's just like the agents we plant in America. I plant the reviews in Rotten Tomatoes.
All right, well, I guess I must say this review in Russian. A much-needed, grounded return of the franchise.
Ah, yes, I agree.
3.5.
I will stick with my 4 out of 5.
It's neither of those. It's 3 out of 5.
Oh, okay.
Very close. We have Anders, who says, review coming soon, ...
Oh, the suspense, mate.
So, hang on. There's no ratings on Rotten Tomatoes, right? That's just Letterboxd?
Yeah.
So, they've written something, or they've rated something, and they're saying, I'll tell you more later on. I think this could be either one of those... 0 or 5 star reviews, probably. Yeah, or 3, just right in the middle, without giving much away.
It would make so much more sense if there was no rating, but yeah, that's only for Letterboxd, which of course we do all the time on raving reviews, but I'm in charge on our Patreon. Check it out, plug.
I'd buy that for $1.
You can, if you want. I think it's the actual rating. I'm going to go 3 out of 5. No, actually, 3.5. I'm changing that, 3.5.
All right. Well, I'm going to go 3, because I feel like that's a nice neutral thing. And if he is going to do the review later on, he could expand upon that. So I'm going to go 3.
That makes sense. But unfortunately, Sandro's right. Hey, it's 3.5.
I've got 2 points. Yes, I am Russian.
You know, last time we did this, I won, but I feel like I'm being creamed.
Yeah, well, it's 2-0. You've got 2 more chances to catch up. If you gain points on this one, I'll give you double on the last one. So this could be for the game.
All right.
Ooh.
We have Landon, who says, overrated, but enjoyable.
Oh.
Now, is Landon's rating overrating it? 3.5.
The overrated, 3.5 is what I would probably give this film. I might go 2.5, actually, right down the middle.
Well, unfortunately, it's 3 out of 5.
Right in the middle.
It's 3 out of 5. All right. Mm. And now for the final answer. As I said, we're going to do double points. So, Reese, you could still tie it up. We have a blank user, no username.
Mm-hmm.
He says, it doesn't exactly thrill me, but it doesn't bore the living daylights out of me.
Hey. Oh, points for that.
So there's that.
Am I going first? I'm going to go 2 out of 5.
2 out of 5. Okay, all right.
I feel like I keep resonating with this number, but I'm going to go 3.
Ah, well, it was 4 out of 5. I think they more said that it didn't bore the living daylights because it was a clever line rather than it was actually what they thought.
Feels disingenuous to me.
Disingenuous. Yeah. Also, if we were playing on who got it closest, I would have gotten a lot more points. Just saying.
All right. Well, 2-0. But you know what? Who's the real winner here? It's you, the listener. So congratulations.
Yeah. Yeah. Thanks for listening.
That is the episode. Thank you so much for joining us again, Reese. Great to have you back on.
Oh, no worries, blokes.
Where can people find you on your Instas, your Twitters? Plug your stuff, the podcasts.
Well, on Instagram and Twitter, I'm Reese Parton, RHYSPARTON. I'm on YouTube, but I haven't uploaded anything in a long time.
Mm.
And eventually, we haven't done it in a while, but Sandro and myself, we do a spin-off of Sandro's show that he does with Rob, who I know has been on this show before, which is Nerd Out Consumed, which is a spin-off of Nerd Out. And it's a lot of fun. It's usually where we get to go off on more riffs than basically follow the plot of one movie. And I feel like we have a lot of fun.
Yeah, and we are figuring out with Rob time to do all of the MCU stuff that's come out this year, because there's 4 stories to talk about so far. WandaVision, Falcon and the Winter Soldier, Loki, and Black Widow. We're going to try and do all of them, probably across 2 episodes. I don't know if that'll be Nerd Out Consumed or Nerd Out Main Show. Who knows, really? We'll figure it out when we record it, but hopefully that'll be out around the time this episode drops. I'll put it in the description if it is.
Yes.
Yeah.
Also in the description, links to all of our stuff, our socials. We're on Instagram. We don't really post too much there, just when new episodes go out, but it is a way to get an alert when a new episode's available. Same as Facebook. That's what Facebook's for. We are on YouTube when I remember to upload episodes. I think I'm about a month behind. I'll go through them hopefully this week and put them all up there. What else? I think that's everything. We've got an email address if you want to ask us any questions. Let me know what your favorite Bond movie is, actually. Send that through on email, because we are very soon on Patreon, not this month, but next month, I'm thinking probably going to do 2 films back-to-back that are, like, related to each other. So we could do 2 extra Bond films, maybe.
Some Bond films? Yeah, that'd be cool. I'd be down to do some Bond films.
You can check that out now if you want. Link in the description.
All right. Sandro, speaking of movies that are coming out.
Ooh.
Next week, you've got to pick the movie that we are going to be doing.
Okay.
You'll have a few choices this week. And by a few, I mean, like, a lot.
All right.
We've got Back to the Beach, which is a parody of teen beach movies. 2 middle-aged former beach partiers try and get back to the beach scene.
I mean, Hunk was good. And that was a teen beach movie, I guess. So, who knows?
Yeah, but this is a parody of teen beach movies.
It's probably terrible.
Well, it could be making fun of the genre, you know? So, you know.
I guess.
Mm-hmm.
We have The Care Bears Adventure into Wonderland.
Oh, hell yeah.
Yeah.
The Care Bears go to the world of Alice in Wonderland. Wow!
I love it. That's the winner so far. Even though I did just look up Back to the Beach, 71% on Rotten Tomatoes. So it could be good.
Oh, there you go. So
I tell you what, blokes, that Care Bears movie sounds like it might be a bit of a guilty pleasure for this bloke.
Yeah, that's a bloke's movie right there.
Yeah.
We have Masters of the Universe.
Oh, no, that's a blokey movie.
That's a bloke film.
Live action He-Man movie where all the characters enter our real world.
Ooh.
Yeah, and the new He-Man show is out on Netflix.
It is.
It should be relevant.
Yeah. Kevin Smith, Mark Hamill's in it.
Yeah.
I have probably watched it by the time this episode's out. So, yeah, interesting.
Yeah.
It's relevant.
What do you mean by the time this episode's out? This is this week that it's coming out.
Yeah. Came out this week.
Yeah.
We have Nadine. She comes into the possession of plans for a proposal road, which are highly confidential.
Mm.
They begin to be stalked by the police and some criminals.
Stakes are high.
Okay.
Speaking of stakes, we have Stakeout. The coach from the Mighty Ducks.
Ooh.
And some other guys are cops. And we have Who's That Girl?
Who's That Girl?
Madonna.
Ooh.
Is falsely sent to jail for killing her boyfriend.
Mm-hmm.
When she gets out, she teams up with a guy to find the real murderers.
Ooh.
Wow, Madonna fighting murderers.
That actually is a little tempting.
It's certainly tempting, for sure.
I'm so tempted to pick Care Bears because that would be hilarious.
Yeah, Care Bears would be pretty funny.
We did pass over an Alvin in the Chipmunks movie a few months back.
Oh, God.
So I kind of feel like we're due for something like that, but I really can't go past Masters of the Universe. I think a live-action He-Man movie.
He-Man's great.
Is Dolph Lundgren He-Man? I think he is. I'm a big fan of Dolph Lundgren.
Yeah.
By the power of Grayskull.
It's the obvious choice, but let's do He-Man.
Yeah. And that way we can compare it to the new series. You know, it ties into relevant things today.
Mm.
We gotta be trendy with the kids, you know?
Yeah.
With the blokes, sorry.
With the blokes, of course.
I don't think I've actually seen this film before. I've heard awful things, but I don't think I've seen it before.
Yeah, I might watch it too.
All right, let's end it with the best quote from The Living Daylights.
Not necessarily a standout quote, but I love the way his agent friend said, "You're bloody late."
Mm.
I'm gonna go with, "If only I could find a real man."
And I will wrap the show up with, "Oh yes, Russian plants." Hello, great. It is me. Oh,
Bond had so many great one-liners, and that's the shit we went
I mean,
with.
Look, it's he got the boot. That's the best quote. But yes.
Green flags. Green flags.
Yes. Green flags all around.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.